This sponsor wants you to know that open networking means more than just white box switching. Who's that? Cumulus Networks, data center networking for the open, modern data center. Visit cumulusnetworks.com to find out more.
This episode is sponsored in part by ThousandEyes. ThousandEyes gives you visibility, insights, and actionable intelligence into user experience from every user to every application over any network. So you transform your WAN, troubleshoot faster, and deliver exceptional user experiences in the cloud and on premises. Try ThousandEyes for free at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers and snag a fun t-shirt. ThousandEyes. Thrive in a connected world.
Welcome to Packet Pushers Heavy Networking, and the topic today is intent-based networking. There has been a number of efforts within the industry to standardize what's been happening with IBN, and we thought, therefore, it'd be a good opportunity to see where we're at. What's going on with intent-based networking? What is it really? What has it become? I'm Ethan Banks. With me is Drew Conry Murray. Drew, we just finished recording the show, and now we're doing our intro because we're crazy like that. what stuck out in your mind in this show that we can highlight for the listeners?
Well, I think it's great that the IETF is sort of getting its feet into IBN because anytime there's a new market category emerging, there's lots of marketing fluff and washing of products. So to have some standards and general definition of what is great. So what stood out for me is areas that the IETF is focusing on. So at the sort of northbound side, how to actually express that intent, that business logic that's going to get programmed into individual devices down below, and then the data models that will help to translate that intent into something that an actual device can work with. We also touched on things like source of truth, which is essential for any kind of automation and orchestration platform, and we got into the weeds on graph databases as well.
We did get into the weeds on graph databases. This was actually one of these nerdy, deep, but very thought-provoking shows because comparing what we do in networking today to where we're headed with intent-based networking, assuming it becomes the thing that is commonplace in some number of years, it's going to be a different world for the average network engineer. So please enjoy this show on intent-based networking as we welcome our guests, Phil Gervasi and Jeff Tansura. Welcoming our guest today. First up is Phil Gervasi. Phil, you're no stranger to the Packet Pushers Network, but for those who don't know you, hey, real quick, sentence or two, who are you and what do you do?
Hey, Ethan. Yeah, my name is Phil Gervasi. I'm a solutions architect for a national VAR. So what I do is work with customers on whatever new technologies they're interested in. That's really kind of what I'm focused on lately rather than a lot of legacy networking.
And you wrote a intent-based networking white paper for Packet Pushers, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah. You wrote two, in fact.
Yep. It's been something I was interested in probably since around 2016 when I first heard the term and before it became really popular. So I sort of just started looking into it and then it snowballed into white papers and podcasts.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we've got that intent-based white papers. Those are on Ignition, which is the Packet Pushers membership site. At $99 a year, you can get access to those white papers and all of the other good stuff that we have up there. Our next guest today is Jeff Tansura. Same question to you, Jeff. Who are you and what do you do?
Hi, Ethan. Pleasure to be here. So two parts of my life. One is I'm heading networking strategy at Apstra, intent-based networking company. Where we build intent-based networking solution for you. Another part of my life is standardization and mostly IETF. I chair two working groups. One of them is the routing working group. Well, all of the routing is really happening. And then we dispatch it to more involved working groups. Another one is Rift routing in fat trees, which is a new routing protocol specifically built for data centers.
Okay, so that's a lot, Jeff, that you do. And you and I connected on this topic of intent-based networking because you've got a presentation depending on when this goes out, either you will have already done or are going to be doing at NANOG. Can you tell us just quickly what that presentation's about?
It's already done, and it's a really vendor-independent explanation of what intent-based networking is, the technology behind how things in particular way could be done. And I was really lucky. Both keynotes were done by Google people, and both of them have talked about intent-based networking and how we cannot live without. So it was perfect segue into my presentation in a way.
Lovely. Well, then let's start at the top, Jeff. Why intent-based networking? What problems are people trying to solve?
So management of networking has always been an afterthought. All of us, we've been doing CLI things for last 20 years, right? Management was, you know, let's build a network, let's configure it by hand and somehow figure out how to manage it. So given the speed, the number of endpoints, complexity of networking, we run out of our cognitive capacity to manage networks. So something had to happen. SDN kind of tried to address this point, but not entirely. It didn't focus on management, but rather on, you know, separation of control and forwarding planes. How do you provide logical view of this? So the really business logic to networking has not been solved yet. So IBM is specifically trying to address this point. How do I take my business logic and instantiate networking in a way consumer doesn't need to know about semantics of networking, whether it's vendor A or vendor B, and it's only interested in outcome.
I could park the whole podcast right here because we could talk about, well, then you need to modularize the network and simplify the network and do a lot of other things that we haven't really done yet as individuals administering our snowflakes. But that would take us too far afield, and we've got a whole bunch of other stuff to get into, Jeff.
And that and those things that are modularized, that's a tough word, abstracted away, those things are more than just the, not just necessarily more than the outcomes, but that's in the context of all those things that we manage in a network. So that would be, you know, our security, the quality of the end user experience, ultimately the delivery of that service or application. So it really encompasses everything. And if you start looking through what the vendors in the intent-based networking space are doing right now, so use that as your starting point, and then you kind of marry that with what the more recent IETF drafts are saying, it really is all about manageability of networks at scale, which ultimately poses challenges, just like Jeff said. So if you start to read through like concepts of network intent from 2017, some of the ones that Jeff wrote, which I read recently, that's all that it's a configuring myriads of nerd knobs, I think is Jeff, those are the words that you wrote.
We're getting away from that configuration because at the pace that applications are being developed and the network is supposed to support them, you can't do that hand curation anymore. You've got to get that automation in place. And IBN seems like it's emerging as one way to bring that automation and orchestration to the network.
Yeah. And I would say that it's probably an evolution of automation to orchestration and now to intent-based networking. So I would look at it as kind of a, you know, a direct relationship from there, the logical next step.
So automation is very much necessary. However, you know, if you automate wrong thing, now blast radius is whole network. It's not just one device. So one of the very important roles of intent-based system is to make sure that what you automate is actually right. And after you have automated and deployed it, you get feedback and validate that it's actually right. So you close the loop.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, I found it interesting that the IETF has gotten involved in intent-based in that it's been a bit of a vendor free-for-all and, you know, marketing and articles and so on, kind of trying to define what IBN actually is. So IETF is stepping in there and putting some definitions around it. So what from an IETF perspective is IBN?
So you'll get as many answers as you ask questions, right? What we are trying to do in the work and the drafts that you mentioned is really to define right vocabulary. Some people think you just put number of policies, you got IBN. Some other people say, if my network is autonomous, it is IBN. So we are trying really to crystallize vocabulary. And when we say IBN, we mean same thing. So there's a number of very important definitions in the draft. One of them is single source of truth. We are going to talk about this through all of podcast. Importance of decoupling policy definitions from policy enforcement. And it goes to being vendor independent, being network independent. Your policy definition could be instantiated in public cloud, on the firewall, as an ACL on the switch. It doesn't really matter. Your intent is still the same. So we are trying to push together this number of building blocks as well as define full lifecycle. The important point about IBM, you have to go through full life cycle. Otherwise, your synchronization with intent is lost. So the definition is really design, so intent consumption, intent modeling. And this is where multi-vendor part come in. My data model doesn't know about vendors. It knows about how intent could be instantiated. then you need to build something that's going to be deployed. At this point in time, you need to get data that's missing to build coherent graph, being iSense, being IP blocks used, being, you know, any data that cannot be auto-derived. And then obviously after you have deployed, you need to validate what has been deployed. You want to deploy something new, or you want to auto-remediate, you want to bring any changes, you go back to the design phase. So intent consumption, intent modeling, intent building, and validation are building blocks that have to be there no matter what you do with intent-based system.
So Jeff, by full life cycle, I guess you mean, it sounds like you broke it down into design, build, deploy, and validate. Is that correct? Okay. And that in the full life cycle, that's what constitutes that closed loop automation orchestration, whatever you want to call it, right?
Correct.
Okay.
One point I wanted to follow up on, Jeff, is you mentioned IBM doesn't know anything about vendors. So that means from an IETF perspective, you're defining what IBM is, but not how the IBM vendor would abstract away vendor specifics?
So there are two very different parts to IBM. There's the consumption phase, so northbound, how you consume the data, how you let end consumer to express their intent. And this is the focus of what we are trying to do today, because if you look at any vendor providing IBM or IBM-alike solution, it's usually done through reasonably intuitive user workflows, but you're limited to what this flow provides you, right? So to define expressible enough northbound API, we need to think about how business logic interacts with networking. And there are more areas to that I'm going to touch upon. There's another part that's southbound of intent-based system. And IETF is doing actually a lot of work in this area in terms of data models. So you've seen IETF has delivered a number of service models, specifically L2 VPN, L3 VPN, some others. There's obviously probably 250 network and protocol models. And finally, vendors delivering device models. So it's much more convenient to use structured data to configure devices, to configure networks, to get some telemetry back over machine-to-machine interface, which is really gRPC or NetConfYank, rather than going through CLI, or if you look at APIs lever provided by NXS or EOS, I mean, I'm not going to bash them, but they're incomplete and sometimes really horrible to use.
Okay, so I just want to read that back and make sure I got it. You're saying from an IETF perspective, what the IETF wants to focus on is at sort of the northbound layer is how organizations can express intent, that is the intent of the outcome they want to get in some kind of language. And then on the southbound side, the IETF is going to focus on the data models for how that intent gets translated into actually going out and expressing that intent into actual devices?
Yeah, so the support of southbound interfaces across industry varies significantly from TL1 on one side to properly implemented NetConfYank on another side. So the role of intent-based system is normalization of those interfaces, right? Again, since it is vendor independent, as end user, as business logic, you don't really care whether you do it over CLI, layer of APIs, or NetConfYank. Mm-hmm. But ideally, we would like to agree on single layer that is implemented by everybody, and you know, there's less work for people actually who are trying to use it.
So pivoting from that, given that there's been a lot of hype in the market about intent-based networking and folks maybe doing some intent-based washing where they say, hey, our product that we've had for years is now intent, can you sort of walk through sort of how do we identify products that some folks might think are intent-based networking, but whether that's right or wrong, I'm thinking like, you know, a network management tool that works for a specific vendor's wireless environment. Is that IBM, or how do we decide what is and what isn't IBM from a product perspective?
So there are a number of kind of fundamental points to IBM. Number one, you define the outcome. You don't tell system how to build it, because this is what IBM is about. Number two, I do believe it has to be vendor agnostic. Somewhere very low at southbound, obviously you go into all semantics. And I'm spending a lot of my time building EVPN between Junos to Cumulus to NXIS to some other stuff, and it's really ugly, believe me.
I can believe you, yes.
But from consumer perspective, they shouldn't really care about it. So being vendor agnostic is one of the mandatory properties, at least from my point of view. Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that on the northbound side, you want to abstract any kind of vendor characteristics from the network operator. So that way they're just saying, this is what the outcome I want is. And then, you know, the IBNS does that. That's fine. So it has nothing to do with the vendor. But from a pure definition perspective, to say, you know, IBN has to be vendor agnostic. I mean, I'm not sure I 100% agree, because then, but you know, choose a vendor that has an IBN solution and it works completely only with their hardware and their software. I mean, it still does. It still might have the network abstraction. It still might operate northbound with very abstracted, you know, network intent. It'll still have closed loop validation and the assurance and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, that's still intent-based networking, but yes, completely in a closed vendor system. Would that not still be intent-based? I do see your point though, Jeff.
But to some degree, yes. Practically, intent-based system is also trying to help you to avoid lock-in and be more agile.
Okay.
So if you have an SDK that's exposed to you just to express your functionality you need for your business, gives you ability to innovate faster. You want to have an alternative. You want to do something that's not supported by your vendor of choice. I mean, with single vendor closed, vertically integrated solution, you're out of luck. Mm. And I mean, it's the worst degree of lock-in. It's being really on software layer, right? Hardware, you can replace. If all your business systems are built around particular software stack, the price, the cost to replacing it is just, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. You would really want to avoid this vertical lock-in.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So then the one of the core tenets, core components of IBN is really abstracting away the network from the network operator. So that way they can focus completely on the network outcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. And therefore, whatever feature you need should not be dependent on the gear that you have sitting out there in your data.
Yeah, so it's important to understand what's really supported from southbound perspective.
Of course, right? Makes sense.
If you're consumers asking for peers and you only support Apples, it doesn't really matter what you do.
Right,
it should be an Apple.
So Phil, did he convince you that a vendor-specific solution, even though it checks all the other boxes of IBN, if it is not vendor agnostic, it's not intent? Or what are you thinking about it now?
Well, the way I see it is that it's still going to have those core components, right? So let's say you're looking at like Cisco SD Access. It's still going to have the continual validation piece. It's still going to abstract away a lot of that stuff. So you're going to still glean a tremendous amount of value. Now, but I do understand Jeff's perspective here that you're not going to be able to abstract it to the extent that maybe the IETF is trying to define IBN as, because you are still locked into what features are in front of you on those physical boxes and inside of this SDN controller. And that's that. You have no recourse. So I see that maybe it's kind of like, it's like IBN on crutches. You know, you're almost there, but you're sort of not able to really abstract the outcome to the extent where the IETF wants.
So the interesting point, however, is that what we do in IETF, it doesn't mandate that your southbound goes towards a device. So it's an endpoint, right? It could be composed, decomposed intent that talks to another system that is lower level. So you can imagine intent-based layer talking to Mist for wireless, talking to Viptela for SD-WAN, talking to Junos Fabric, right? But in this case, what you do, you normalize the intent across different consumers, southbound. And no one does it today this way. I think Cisco is trying because they're doing everything. But this is really complex and interesting problem. How do you normalize the fact that your wireless user should get particular quality of service versus same user going over SD-WAN link and getting particular quality of experience? So this is something I've been looking at for the last 3-4 months, and it's fascinatingly interesting work.
But to sort of flip that on its head, if we're talking about you know, if a vendor specific product meets the definition of IBN and delivers the value that you want, isn't that necessarily a good thing, as opposed to waiting for a quote unquote pure, entirely vendor neutral IBN platform, where I'm sort of waiting on that vendor who's creating this vendor neutral platform to be able to incorporate everything that might be in my network, a third-party firewall vendor, a wireless switch vendor, a WLAN vendor, a switch vendor, and maybe in some parts of my network, I've got, you know, an open source network OS. I'm playing devil's advocate here, but does it matter whether it's entirely vendor neutral if I'm still getting value out of it?
Probably if you look tactically, maybe not so much. If you look strategically, you won't have choices. We all do, humans, right? So by building fully vertically integrated solution, you've chosen your partner for life.
Right.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, people won't have choices. And I think IBM, that is vendor agnostic, makes it easier to go to your vendor and say, you know what, unless you deliver stuff that I really wanted you to deliver for the last 5 years, I can actually switch.
Mm-hmm. We interrupt this program for a very special bulletin. Yeah, I always wanted to say that. Anyway, at the top of this episode, I mentioned that Cumulus Networks is pointing out that there's more to open networking than just buying a white box switch and throwing a NAS on it. Open networking and white box, these are not interchangeable terms. Open networking includes white box, but from the Cumulus point of view, open networking also includes automation, efficient operations, flexible choice, and scalability. That is, you're not supposed to have to compromise your network's capabilities when you transition from a legacy network architecture to an open one. Cumulus offers automation via native integration with tools including Ansible and Salt. You gain efficiency because under the hood, the Cumulus NAS is Linux, as in real Linux you can interact with in the way that you're used to, so you manage your switches in much the same way as you manage your servers. You also get flexibility because you have a wide range of vendors and switching platforms Cumulus Linux runs on, and of course, Cumulus scales. The earliest Cumulus data center architectures were all about scalability. So don't conflate open networking and white box. You should expect the open networking story to be more broad. Your operations and insight should live up to a high standard of excellence. Wait a minute, I just said insight a second ago, and I didn't even mention NetQ, which is Cumulus's tool to give you actionable insight about what's happening on the network from the host to the switch. All the pieces are there to build your data center, private cloud, and even your campus. To learn more about open networking, head to cumulusnetworks.com/open. That's cumulusnetworks.com/open, and we thank them for being a Packet Pushers sponsor. Your regularly scheduled episode returns in 3, 2, 1. If my IBM management layer is the point of abstraction at which I view the network, then I can mix and match all sorts of different things underneath it. But I don't know, that just sounds like enormously complex. I'm dubious we can get there as an industry, Jeff. Hopeful, but okay, so case in point. Let's say today I want to automate my complex campus using IBM, but if I look at what the IBM products that are out there, most of those tools are focused on the data center. Let's dive into that for a second, Jeff. Why is that? And do we ever get to the point where we can use IBM for any sort of network environment?
So very particular and important property of IBM we didn't mention is ability to reason about changes. In order to be able to reason, you need to understand the context. If you look at data centers specifically, the leaf spine networks are the standard. They are very easy to understand. They mutate in very common ways, whether you go from, you know, 4 switches to 40 or 4,000. The model is exactly the same. You don't connect devices at the same layer. The interconnection is a particular way. If you are larger, you might have one additional, two additional stages. You might have more planes, but the model is exactly the same. That's why what you see in IBM, and goes back to my company as well, data center and movement from all the snowflake architecture to single well-defined building block, which is a pod point of delivery today, makes it much easier to start with. Also build your experiences and, you know, reason about the changes. You know, when in closed network, something changes, you could look at any symptom of it. You could derive the root cause reasonably easy. It's all, you know, within reach.
Yeah, and remember that in order for an IBNS to work, every single element in the network has to be abstracted, but down to interfaces and, you know, policies. So things that don't even exist in the physical realm have to be extracted, live in code or as mathematical functions like some vendors do. And so it's going to be incredibly difficult to just, you know, year one, start from scratch at your startup. And then year two, you've abstracted everything, including all of the relationships among these millions of objects sitting in your database. That's very, very difficult. So that's an uphill battle, Ethan. I think it's a worthy thing to do, but that's I think we're, the roadmap we're on, and I think Jeff sort of alluded to it. You know, kind of danced around it. The data center is one spot where things are relatively like you can focus on a single model, and then create your reference architectures for these are how my interfaces connect to here, and then you can add the intelligence and say, okay, present to me all my 40 gig interfaces on Cumulus switches with this version of code, and you get that specific.
I think it goes back to that modularity, though, Phil. So mm-hmm. Jeff, you just gave this idea of, you know, if we were moving away from Snowflake environments and we were standardizing and modularizing our environments so that they were predictable, then IBN gets much easier. And it doesn't matter if you've got millions of endpoints. If those are modularized in such a way, it's like, oh, this group of endpoints matches up with this sort of a module that maps well into an IBN definition of a particular kind of module, and I know how to deal with that, and I can manage it. It's just that we don't build networks that way today.
Yeah, so on data center side of things, we are, right? There's huge willingness to go into standardized structure, which is really a pod, right? If you look at campus networks, they started to think exactly the same way, because you look at any large enterprise, campus is a mess, right? Five different generation of hardware, seven different architectures sold by new sales engineers. It's unmanageable. So if you look at larger companies, they're at the beginning, same journey we've taken with data centers. You agree on 2, 3, 4 standardized architectural building blocks. In most cases, that look exactly like Leaf Spine Network because it just makes sense from scaling out perspective. And I mean, it's going to follow exactly the same structure. Some difference, obviously, you need to connect Wi-Fi. There's some semantics to that, but they're reasonably well understood and abstractable. So I truly believe that campus will follow closely the data center structure from this perspective. So less snowflakes, more standardized building blocks that reduce complexity, use kind of standard ways of building, well-understood ways. And I do believe IBNs are going to help here, especially in this transition where you go from unknown to known. And, you know, since an IBN usually would give you reasonably rigid framework of how things should be done, and if company understands what they're doing, they also explain why and why this way is better than another way. It will give you ability to reasonably painless to migrate from mess into more structured network.
From a mess into a more structured network. I love it.
Or into a less messy network.
You're filling me with hope, Jeff. I mean, there's issues of getting those definitions and modules standardized, but then training network engineers to understand what these are and to use them, and then to take all of the existing campus networks that are out there and then retrofit them to this model, or at least with net new going forward. That would be great. That would be a great start. So maybe we do get that. I mean, it couldn't take us as an industry any more than like 50 or 100 years to get here, ultimately, I don't think.
So the point is that we are going through significant hardware refresh right now. So if you look at Cisco specifically, there's a whole new generation of product, all new catalysts. And if you look at feature set traditionally and our campus switches were the cheapest, the dirtiest thing, right? If you look at newer generation, the feature set is quite consistent with kind of bigger brothers and data center. Most of them support EVPN. Most of them give you ability to provide segmentation kind of standardized way of thinking, EVPN VXLAN, for example, mm-hmm. right? So the kind of significant difference between hardware that was used in campus versus hardware that's used in data center is disappearing, really. So there's an opportunity to simplify, to reduce operational cost, and to standardize across. So again, most large companies would have both data centers and campus networks. If you build them the same way, you operate them the same way, you just cut your cost in half at least.
Which goes back to the idea that this is all about managing networks at scale and network operations argument more than, you know, we invented a new routing protocol, which would be awesome, but yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that concept of managing a network as a system as opposed to a bunch of individual elements? Because in some ways it seems like it's not how networks were originally designed, where each element essentially has a little bit of autonomy and it's supposed to function with some autonomous decision-making power in a distributed environment. So what am I doing now differently with IBM?
So network is a distributed system where every element behaves in a particular way, right? If you look at it from element perspective, you don't really see anything around you. So think about routing protocol. You understand what your peer told you. You are going to tell some other peers about this stuff. However, if you look at distributed system world, which is not necessarily networking, it's reasonably old world, your end behavior is really the system behavior. So how all the devices that compose the distributed system behave in a way your outcome is what you want it to be. So since intent-based system consumes all the telemetry, all the information, all the states from the network, it actually sees everything about the network. So now you can go and assess distributed system state versus device A versus device B. So now you can correlate if I have five devices and two of them got disconnected, what does it mean for system as a whole? What is the impact, both business and technological impacts? So finally, we are getting all the information in same place. And IBM doesn't have to consume all of it directly. It could talk to BMP server, it could talk to NetFlow collector, it could talk to many different things, as long as it gets data that it can understand and correlate in context.
And what ultimately we're talking about now is that single source of truth, right?
Yes.
That's one of the advantages of intent-based networking that I think a lot of folks just bypass. You know, we talk about, SDN and the controller and abstracting everything, and that's cool, improving network operations. And then maybe one day in some years, having some sort of autonomous remediation and self-operating networks. That's really cool to think about down the road. But right now, and I think Apstra calls it intent-based analytics. Is that right, Jeff?
Correct.
That's the visibility portion. There's tremendous value here in the interim between, you know, advanced orchestration and autonomous remediation, where we have this single source of truth that is, streaming telemetry real time, very different than it was in the past. I think that's something not to overlook.
Yeah. So intent-based analytic is a very interesting area. And as you could see, we are getting more and more data from the network. Mm-hmm. Finally, every vendor implemented streaming telemetry. A lot of them implemented hardware telemetry, so you get really high-definition data about queue occupancy at nanoseconds level. Right? So there's a lot of data coming in to the degree that you need to build additional out-of-band network to transport it. You need to build out-of-band data center to process it.
That's the problem.
Yeah. At some point, getting the data and doing nothing with it becomes cost prohibitive. So what intent-based analytic intend to do, no pun intended, is to ask the right question. So if I deploy, EVPN, and I have three L2 VNIs, I should see three type three routes for it, right, for flooding. So rather than trying to gather all 100 million of them, why don't I just ask for those three? If I run BGP in an underlay, I know exactly what my next hop should look like. Why should I retrieve all the internet routes? So by crafting right questions that are in context, you reduce amount of information by order of magnitude, and you know exactly the impact. So if something isn't working, you know who is affected, you know how affected, and you could go into server assurance more, whatever you build, to make sure that your server is still working and either remediate or notify the business logic that something isn't working.
Right. That's the core here. That's the closed loop. And I'm going to quote from one of the IETFs that Jeff wrote. An intent-based system is a learning system. I don't know if you remember crafting those words, Jeff, but I read them. And I thought that was very poignant and it's stuck in my mind. The single source of truth is not just really cool data that we can munge and look at and figure things out. It is like kind of the core here. That is the it's the ongoing diff that we do to look at things like as basic as config drift, as he mentioned, but also policy and expected behavior, which is significantly beyond the configuration drift, and I think even more important. So, yeah, it's the basis of intent-based networking in that.
Yeah, and I want to push on single source of truth a little bit because I feel like this is obviously a key issue. When I hear that phrase, I think about CMDBs, and we all know how well that worked out. So what is the single source of truth in an IBN? Is it the device itself? Is it the IBN analytics system? What is the source of truth?
So device can never be source of truth. What you see on device is rendering of your intent, right? And it could be ephemeral. It could be more static. So if we look today, it's mostly configuration files that's on the device, right? Mm-hmm. Theoretically, it could be ephemeral indeed. And if you look at IETF, all the stuff we did with past computation logic is ephemeral. So if device reloads, there's nothing on it. So it might be interesting next step in the industry, actually, to remove configuration from the devices. Mm-hmm. But the role of single source of truth is to, on one way, to consume the data from all the data publishers, being business logic, being all kind of analytical system, because as we said, you cannot scale enough to consume all the data. So you need to be able to interact or subscribe data from NetFlow collectors, from SLO collectors, from BGP monitoring system, and so forth. Southbound, you're configuring either devices or another system. So again, you need to be able to take all this different very different pieces of information and data and normalize them in a way anyone who consumes it southbound of you could take it and do something with it. So if it's a real device, it could be a piece of text file that you're going to push down over SSH. If it's more intelligent system, it could be something you use and a RESTful call to configure it. If it's a system, you might say, you know what, your wireless system, I need you to allow this customer or this user or this user group with particular characteristics and let me know if it's successful or not. So it's really taking all these different sources of data and normalizing them across all the consumer of the data. And in a way, if they need validation, they only talk to you because you are the only entity who knows that the data is up to date and has been validated semantically.
So are you saying that the single source of truth then is this sort of gestalt of essentially the current state of the network, all the configurations, flow data, whatever else is happening, as it's held in the IBN system with the business intent on top of that?
Yeah, you could see it like that. So it has northbound part that's consumption of logic and southbound part that is normalized data that can be consumed by others.
Let's pause the podcast for a moment to tell you about today's sponsor, ThousandEyes. Like it or not, your organization is embracing the cloud, and that might be great for the business, but for network architects and IT ops teams, it can be a service delivery nightmare. Why? Well, you're depending on cloud providers, ISPs, and third-party apps for business-critical services. And even though you don't control those networks, you do own the service delivery, which means if performance is bad, people are going to come looking for you. And this is where ThousandEyes can help. You can take advantage of ThousandEyes agents across the cloud within your enterprise all the way down to the endpoint. These agents actively monitor network behavior and topologies and how they affect application performance. With ThousandEyes, you can correlate multiple layers of performance data from L2 to L7, including BGP routing and DNS, to quickly identify problem areas and dramatically reduce your mean time to repair. You can pinpoint the root cause of device faults, congestion, Wi-Fi quality, DDoS attacks, and more. And you don't have to keep all this intelligence to yourself. You can easily share events, metrics, and dashboards with your vendors and customers so that you can collaborate to resolve problems faster. Now, ThousandEyes also aggregates anonymized real-time data from a collective dataset so they can generate insights about large-scale issues across the internet, including their severity and breadth, as well as likely root cause. Now, if all that sounds good to you, here's a special offer for Packet Pushers listeners. Try ThousandEyes for free at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers. And while you're there, get yourself a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. That's thousandeyes.com/packetpushers. Manage every network like it's your own. ThousandEyes. Thrive in a connected world. And now, back to the podcast.
Jeff, you've brought something up that I had not considered before. So when thinking about closing the loop, typically the path you have gone to check, not you specifically, but just that if you look at these systems that are out there, how do you prove that the intent has been met? Well, you log into a variety of devices across the network. Maybe you scrape a bunch of show commands or pull that data programmatically if you can. You validate that the forwarding tables are what you expect them to be, and voila, it's all good. And you've brought in this completely external method of checking. It's like, well, sure, but what if the device that you're pulling that information from is lying to you? How could you independently check that? Well, I could look at flow data and I could verify that indeed these packets flowing across the wire are going where I intended them to go, and they're showing up where I intended them to show up on the other end. I hadn't considered that. And it definitely means you're proving intent more thoroughly than you would have before. But as you've said, Jeff, it is an enormous amount of data that you could be undertaking to have to process to get to that conclusion.
And you need to know what questions to ask. And I think this is fundamental to be able to scale. You should only look at data that's actionable. The rest is just, noise.
And how does the system determine what's noise and what's actionable? That seems like a perpetual problem we've got, regardless of the IT discipline we're in.
So the difference now is that you're in closed-loop system. When you kind of normalize your intent, when you consume it, you can build the expectations immediately because you know what you're building. You know the context. You know what questions to ask. And I think a bit later in the show, we'll go about graph databases and how they're used in IBMs. You build number of relationship between every object in your data model. And since you can now compose number of nodes in the database and ask questions, show me, all the devices that are that run in particular iOS version. Show me all the counters on all the devices that connect to the fabric. Show me all the links that carry traffic from a particular application. So based on your business logic, and you decide what's important, what question to ask. If you have right infrastructure below it, you could craft any question at runtime. And the metadata that's attached to the node gives you ability to express pretty much anything.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, it's one of these things where I'm listening to this going, yes, that is very capable and powerful of an idea, and I'm not the one who wants to sit there and write that code. So you guys go ahead and write that for me.
If you look at Twitter and Facebook, this is exactly how relationships between different users are built.
Hmm. Well, maybe we should jump into the modeling discussion then, Jeff, because we've alluded to it. As I was digging through your NANOG presentation on this topic, you had mentioned that in order for IBN to do what it does, it works best with modeling the network using a graph database to describe the relationship between the different nodes in the graph, as well as being able to, as you put it, craft database queries at runtime. So redigest that for us, put that back into English so those of us that aren't graph database people can get a sense of what this is all about.
Sure. So graph database type database where you've got nodes that are connected by relationships. On another side, if you think about networking, networks are nothing else. Data center, densely connected graphs. So the mapping is relatively straightforward. As you start building your database and thinking about network, you've got your OSI layers, really. Physical connectivity, logical connectivity, services on top. So after you've built your physical map, which is, again, leaf connected to interfaces on the leaf, connected to link that is connecting leaf to someone else, And we know that in leaf spine is going to be spine, connected to spine, connected to superspine, so forth. So this is reasonably easy to build, and mapping from a network graph is one-to-one. As you start building your logical connectivity, again, we really understand how any routing protocol works, how graphs are looking for, so mapping is, again, one-to-one. On top of that, you would like to build your service map, which is much more interesting because these are not physical entity. It's something that is connected to your network, but it's mobile, but it's connected to more than one endpoint. So when you model your services on top, you've got full vertical graph that is applicable to kind of horizontal structure, which is not a relationship to another node.
So just to encapsulate what we've got so far, the graph, the idea behind the graph database is to explain at multiple layers the interconnection points of the network. So I've got interfaces that are plugged into one another. Those are going to, across the entirety of the network, build out a graph that shows me how my entire network, end-to-end, is interconnected. And then on top of that, we've got the logical layer and then an application layer. And so using the graph, we can then figure out how data is flowing across the network using this modeled representation in software of this graph. Am I close?
Very, very good explanation, yes.
And that's including every physical device and every physical component. But like Jeff was saying, every logical thing, like a policy, like a service policy, you mentioned things like that, those all exist as data points, which are ultimately stored in this data store. And we need to create some method to organize that. A lot of it's unstructured data, if you're familiar with machine learning. And so you use a graph data store to overlay that structure and then create those meaningful relationships between this is what a cumulus switch is. It is a collection of all these components, you know, that sort of thing. And then this is how this relates to this other switch in the spine. And that's where you define the overall logic, and that's how you derive meaning inside of that largely unstructured data. Does that make sense?
Great explanation, Phil. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. I take that as a great compliment that Jeff said that.
Pat yourself on the back, Phil.
To follow that up, Phil, a node on the graph is not a switch. A node on the graph is some physical endpoint, like an interface, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's why, if you think about it, these databases get incredibly large because it's every single component. And this is the power of intent-based networking. That's where it's derived from. It's because everything is abstracted from the physical and all the different physical components to the logical structures, like a security policy, like a business outcome, ultimately.
Yeah, and this is where differentiation is coming in the vendor space, because everyone can take Neo4j and build some stuff. Mm-hmm. If you are getting to, I don't know, 500 million endpoints with all the relationships around this, you need to start thinking, how do you scale? Sharding graphs is an incredibly complex problem. You could look, there's quite some academical discussions about it. So this is where kind of excellence in engineering becomes obvious as you try to scale, as you add more and more relationships, more and more metadata mm-hmm. to the graph itself.
And once I've got this graph database, what do I do with it? How does it tie into day-to-day operations?
So what graph represents is really your intended state. So it's your outcome. It's what your network with all the services on it should look like. The analytical part is constantly comparing operational state, including derived state, to your intended state. If they're the same, obviously system is working because you got what you intended to get. If there's a delta, you could go down to lower layers and drill down what's not working. For example, on service layer, there's no connectivity. Mm-hmm. You could go into networking layer and is IP route for this endpoint available on the fabric? Maybe you get it's available, but this is the next hop in BGP. And since you know what it should be, you can immediately say, hey, next hop is not right. So So while I should be getting next hop A, I'm getting next hop B, and an interface being done would explain it, but I don't see interface being done. So the conclusion, interface is up. It's not detected by the system, but it cannot send traffic. It cannot, PGP is broken between them. So by going down in layers, you could, based on symptoms, derive the root cause analysis. And this is another very important and upcoming topic in intent-based system. How, and since you know all the symptoms, can you identify root cause for a problem?
In theory, you could, right, Jeff? Because, in other words, maybe there's some expert systems kind of stuff that needs to get baked in, but there are a number of inferences that I can imagine a human making if you understand that something happened to the graph where all of these endpoints go down, they're no longer available in part of the graph. Oh, the root cause is the switch is down. And the, you know, from there you can determine what happens next and what the problem is. But I guess now that I'm talking myself through this, we've really been trying to get ourselves away from expert systems and not trying to bake in specific human knowledge. You really want it to be algorithmically derived what the root cause is. Is that fair?
Ideally, yes. Practically, you still need very specific domain knowledge here. And yeah, this is where, fortunately, I'm spending a lot of my time on really validating this deeply technical and vendor-specific semantics, right? Eventually, at some point in time, hopefully machine learning will help us with a lot of that. As of today, it's still mostly humans. It's just the difference now, you define the behavior, which is somewhat easier to fit to the system, for system to consume and reason about it. And you know network-wide status. It's not a device that behaves a particular way, and it's pretty much impossible to say why. Now you're looking at distributed system state, and it's much easier to define why it looks in a particular way.
What we're talking about are an incredible amount of objects in the database, and then we have data models that collect some of that, and they logically represent all these different things, like a BGP configuration and what that's supposed to look like. And so we're talking about another level of intelligence that Jeff is kind of discussing here, to then say, all right, now how does that fit into the overall network? That's incredibly complex. I think that's where we're headed, though. Is where that intelligence is there to then derive some sort of meaning of like, all right, this is what the root cause is. This is how you can fix it. And then, by the way, let me go and fix it myself. And then give you a quick, I'll throw something into service now so you know what happened.
On a very different side of the world, service provider, we've been trying to build this logic for many years, specifically traffic engineering and PCE logic. So do you need to reschedule? Do you need new LSP? Do you preempt? Do you not? So all the business logic. And there's really a lot of work that we did in this area, right? Now we are trying to make it work properly and at a distributed system scale, not just LSP scale that doesn't take into consideration anything else. And finally, we've got enough data from the network itself to reason about significance of a change, potentially in the future, making it even better.
Jeff, I got a question about IBN and scale. So you've mentioned some enormous possible data center networks where you've got spines and even super spines, which would scale to many, many thousands of ports. Does IBN care about that, or is there any concern when we're dealing with seven stage, 5,000 racks versus something that's very small, three stage and maybe 50 racks?
It's a very practical question. At some particular point, no database can hold the amount of information, right? So you need to start thinking how you partition the graph. As we said, sharding is complex, so you could scale it out. There are different technologies to do this. You could provide hierarchical structure where every subsystem holds part of the state, and there is Uber systems that kind of know the abstracted way. Again, we've done this in transport networks. If you look at ACTN framework, it's pretty much what it is. So it's very practical consideration, and building our system, my company, we do see this limitation. So from release to release, we are trying to improve it, use better algorithms, use better caching, fill out more. It's a complicated problem, and the amount of state growing with number of devices, number of data points, you really need to seriously consider what you do with it, what do you abstract, what's important, how long do you keep it. So very practical questions to pretty much any database management.
You answered that in a way that I genuinely wasn't certain where you were going to go with this. Because one part of me said, gosh, CPU and memory is like cheap and you can build an enormous server that would easily handle really any sort of a network, because at the end of the day, I mean, even thousands of switches isn't that many, really, even if you add their interfaces in. But you know, what you're saying here is for IBM to do what it does and do all the calculations it does and do all the closed loop verification that it does, ingest all the data that it might need to, aside from merely building a graph database of the connected systems, it's all of a sudden a big data problem where we need to distribute data and databases and compute in order just to keep up with what's going on. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so on one side, the role of IBM is to reduce the amount of data you need to reason about it. This is what really IBA is about. On another side, as you're trying to manage larger and larger objects, you need to, you know, to think from engineering perspective, when should I start partitioning the data? And very serious consideration with regards to product design and how you do it. And since analytics are intent-driven, the larger the intent is, the more analytical data you need. So again, all of this drives size and complexity.
Well, let me ask you another complexity sort of a question. As I was digging through your NANOG presentation, you mentioned that IBM needs programmable interfaces for both the control plane and the data plane. And my brain went, wait a minute. Because control plane, yeah, obviously, okay, we need to be able, that needs to be programmable. But why the data plane, for those of us that are thinking the data plane is the exclusive domain of the control plane? Program the control plane and the data plane will follow.
All of us who are old enough remember things like Ceph inconsistencies, right? Everybody was beaten by inconsistencies.
Ceph was one of the first things I had to learn about when I was getting into Cisco stuff. Wait a minute, the routing table says this. And then you look up the Ceph table and go, oh, why isn't it going there? What's happening? So yes, I am old enough to remember that.
So while looking at control plane is important, and ideally it should completely drive the forwarding plane, the reality is different. We still see a lot of inconsistencies between what it should be versus what it is. So ability to understand data that's coming from forwarding chips is very important from proper validation perspective. So if we look at hardware streaming telemetry that current vendors are implementing, it helps a lot because it gives you the data from the ASIC that was previously available through, I don't know, Broadcom shell and some, you know, inner magic is getting exposed. But we are not there yet, so you really want to be able to consume data from both control and forwarding planes. From programmability perspective, there are less use cases. I would say that correlation and decoupling control from forwarding plane is a complex problem. So we've seen this with P4. With really good intention, the use cases are limited and very niche, right? So I would say it's more to getting structured data from forwarding plane than trying to program it directly from the controller, which doesn't.
But you still need an interface. Yeah. I get it. You still got to have an interface in order to be able to pull that data. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. All right.
And I want it to be structured. So something like GNMI helps really a lot.
Well, Jeff, I think a good way to close this discussion would be by focusing on the closing the loop part of the discussion. We've done some of that discussion already, but some people think, oh, closing the loop, what do we mean? Network monitoring, like SNMP and some graphs, right? That's what I've been doing for years. That's how I close the loop, baby. I can tell if it's red light, green light, and what's going on. which of course is not at all what intent-based networking or intent-based analytics means by closing the loop. So I know we've talked about it a little bit, but let's articulate this in more detail.
As we said, the last stage of intent-based network deployment is the continuous validation. What the full lifecycle gives us is also understanding of context and what questions to ask. So rather than using classical SNMP approach, let's walk the enterprise MIP and get all the data. By the way, it takes 15 minutes to retrieve it, but hey, this is the best. Now you can ask very specific questions. I'm interested in this particular route and all semantics around this route. I'm interested in this particular data because this is the service I have deployed. I'm not interested in anything else, really. If we are looking at what industry is doing, so this is not necessarily directly related to IBM, is all the young efforts around give you ability to query every leaf in the tree. With streaming telemetry, you can also ask a device to stream your data about any changes in this particular leaf. So suddenly you could go very granular saying, I'm only interested in counter on this interface and only if it gets hit more than 5 times a second. So you are getting very, very high definition specific data that can be immediately correlated to your network state, device state, service state, and you know business logic on top. I'm not sure whether I answered your question, but we are changing from asking, tell me everything, and if I'm lucky, I'll fish out something of this data, to I know exactly what to ask, and based on what you've given me, I'll know exactly about my current operational state.
The key for me was to just remind people that if you're used to SNMP monitoring, which is what so many of us have been doing for so very long, because it's kind of the best we had, you're used to that monitoring system telling you what's going on, and then you as the human are inferring whether the network is doing what it's supposed to be doing or not. And that's not intent-based. Intent-based is not only declaring your state and then having that state put down into the network so that the network's doing what you want it to do, it is also validating what the network is doing and that the state is still as intended. And so there's this idea that it's not up to you as the human to worry about that anymore. You would be paying attention to the intent-based analytics system telling you something's gone wrong that it can't fix or that you need to at least schedule a fix. You know, it's a different way of thinking about it where you're defining policy, you're defining a state and intent of what the network's supposed to be, and the system as a whole makes sure that that intent is and remains in place. It's a whole different ballgame from SNMP, which is really, I pulled some stats and here's a screen and you can kind of see what the stats are that I pulled and then you kind of figure out whether the network's doing what you mean for it to be doing or not. It's a completely different thing.
And so there are 2 points to this. One is complexity. So you're getting 22,000 symptoms. Try to figure out what they all mean. On another side is really the detailness of the data you're getting. Let's take an example. You receive a cert message that Cisco devices, particular iOS version, are vulnerable to something. Since the information about which devices are Cisco and which iOS they're running already in your graph, the query is going to be very simple. Show me all Cisco devices that run particular iOS version. Suddenly you get subgraph of your network that's of interest, that's potentially affected, that potentially could be upgraded, monitored, or you can take an action. So it's coming from both sides, amount of data and complexity of the data to ability to really filter out actionable data out of it.
And also if I go then make those changes necessary to mitigate the vulnerabilities in those devices, I also get that validation that yes, those fixes are in place and it's operating as I intended.
And hence closing the loop.
Right.
That's the point. Yeah.
That's that close loop
point,
right?
And in the context of the business outcomes that we expect, that's always the drivers. That's what we expect. And so it's just getting graphs of SNMP data. Well, what's meaningful? I don't know. It's, you know, I see... See lots of different counters, and is that okay? I don't know. What's the application experience like? So that's it, is defining it in the greater context that Jeff alluded to many times. of the the business outcome.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a good discussion on IBN and the state of the industry, where we're at, and what we should be looking for. I think it was just now that there's standards going in place around IBN, and it's not merely a term that's getting flung around in keynotes and marketing literature. It felt like a really good time to have this discussion. So, Jeff Tantsura, thank you very much for coming on Heavy Networking to chat with us, especially with how deeply you're involved in a lot of this work. And how can people follow you, Jeff, on the internet?
I'm also active on LinkedIn. I do some tweeting as well, less than LinkedIn, and just ping me. Let's get connected and let's talk.
Very good. Phil Gravasi, you're no stranger to Packet Pushers, but let folks know how they can follow you.
Sure. Yeah, I'm active on LinkedIn as well, so just look me up there, but also Twitter at @network_Phil, and then my blog, networkphil.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. I'm Ethan Banks. Drew Conroy Murray was also with us. I'm Maddie C. Banks. Drew is at @Drew_CM on Twitter. You can hit us up as well. And you can find this and many more of our fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog. That's all at packetpushers.net. You can tweet the show at packetpushers. We do monitor that account. And we're on LinkedIn too if you'd like to follow us there. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.